right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast, off-season solo edition. My name is Keith. I'm here alone without John or Chuck. But again, as promised, John and Chuck will be back very soon, I think, to record a podcast for you guys. In the meantime, I'm going to talk about the Atlanta Hawks, a team whose uniforms I actually really like, as long as they don't mismatch the tops and bottoms. At that point, no one can defend that. Anyway, before we get there, just a reminder, we're doing a Fan Essentials prize pack giveaway. Last week, a Mr. Tim Tom 1982 won gear for the sports team of his choice. So once again, keep writing iTunes reviews in our next episode, which will come up later this week. I want to say on Thursday, we will pick another winner of those people who have written reviews, iTunes reviews, since August started. So if you've already written a review, you know, just borrow someone else's phone, use their iTunes login, write another one. So get to writing those reviews and you can win a Fan Essentials box. Otherwise, go to fanessentials.net and check out all the sweet collectibles and clothes for your favorite teams and use the code FBBF when ordering to save 30%. Also, I want to tell you about another NBA podcast that has also been plugging away this summer, the Drive and Dish podcast from Jacksonville, Florida. And here is a little more about them.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
Okay, and now just one more plugged-in commercial till we get to our guest, Brad Rowland, to discuss the Atlanta Hawks. And you can skip to that in 3, 2, 1. My guest today is the host of the Locked on Hawks podcast and a writer covering Atlanta sports for Fansided and for Peachtree Hoops, among other places, Mr. Brad Rowland. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, man. What's going on? I'm ready to talk some hoops.
Ready to talk some hoops?
I was gonna
break it down. How are things in the Deep South in Atlanta?
Good. It's actually kind of ugly weather-wise because of the hurricane stuff. Not as bad as it is in Florida. Everything else is good, man. Ready for football here. This is definitely football territory, and football's opening, so that's kind of the craze now. But I'm always a basketball first guy, so I'm more ready for that than anything else.
Right. I've let college football almost completely drift from my life, where, like, I guess 5 years ago I was as hardcore as anybody. But we're recording this taping on Friday, and so I guess Thursday night there was a lot of college football. I did find myself watching the ends of games, and I felt like I saw so many head-scratching coaching decisions where it just made me angry. I watched. I'm like, why did I even bother watching these people? They clearly don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's about right. This is you can't get away from college football in Atlanta if you live here. And I do like I kind of love college football. So it's fine with me. But good luck being a sports fan in Atlanta if you don't like football, because it's kind of all you hear about here.
Right. Well, it's a tradition of ours to ask our guests what they had for breakfast. So did you have breakfast this morning?
I actually didn't have breakfast, but if I had breakfast, I probably would have had a bagel. I'm a big bagel guy. That's my go-to.
A big bagel guy. It has been actually kind of a running. I feel like we have a pretty solid streak of our guests not having eaten breakfast. So that's we're keeping that up. You kept that up. So no worries.
That's unfortunate for sure. And I actually planned to in preparation for this podcast, but I woke up late today, so it didn't happen.
That's pretty funny. The days that we record with our other co-hosts, I normally go out of my way to eat breakfast, because also I don't always eat a breakfast, but it's definitely like find myself breakfast shopping, being like, man, we're taping today, I got to eat something.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Since you are in Atlanta, a city that I will sometimes find myself in, I'm curious, do you have any specific recommendations of places I can actually go to
breakfast wise
yeah, man, breakfast, brunch?
Let's see. My go-to bagel spot is Goldberg's Deli, which is it's just a bagel spot. It's very like New Yorkish bagel place. Love that place for bagels.
Yep.
My go-to breakfast spot, if I'm going to do that, is West Egg Cafe.
West
Big fan of the
Egg.
West Egg.
I like that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily convenient for me, so it's like almost something I have to plan in advance, but it's definitely worth the trip if you can make it.
Is that a Great Gatsby reference?
I think it might be. I don't know. That sounds like it would be. I haven't read that book since high school, so I'm trying to remember.
But. I used to read. It's been a while. But anyway, so yeah, so we can get to the Hawks. We can get to the hoops. So the Atlanta Hawks had, I think, maybe one of the most dramatic off seasons of as far as change to the roster and the big names moving in and out. So I'm curious, as a Hawks fan, can you walk me through what that was like going into this offseason, starting with the Jeff Teague trade and then Dwight Howard and then Al Horford moving?
It was a lot of highs and lows for me personally. I really liked the Teague trade. I was surprised that the Hawks were able to get a lottery pick for him, knowing full well that it was kind of a badly kept secret here that he was going to be the guy who they shipped away in favor of Dennis Schroeder. They were not that they don't like Teague, but Teague is obviously the older guy, would have been an unrestricted free agent after this year, and it was kind of time for Teague to move on. So that was, I thought, a good start to the offseason. From there, I like the draft a lot as well. Both the guys they drafted, Taurean Prince and DeAndre Bembry, are guys that I'm a fan of, and I thought were pretty good values where they got them. So I was generally pleased. And of course, free agency did not go the way that I would have wanted it to go. I'm not the biggest fan of the Dwight Howard, Al Horford swap. I know that wasn't a direct swap, but not super high on what they did there, although I will say that Dwight could be better than I think he is, but I didn't love free agency at all. So it was a good start and not such a good end, so to speak, when it comes to the summer, what they did in free agency, although I do love Kent Bazemore, so it's nice to see Kent back as a guy who I enjoy covering quite a bit as someone who's easy to talk to in a locker room and all that stuff. So I'll try to get some positives there, but I didn't love free agency.
Yeah, so what was it like early in free agency that Dwight Howard was signed? And at that point, the Hawks were saying like they wanted to keep Horford and Millsap and Howard. Did you think that had any chance of working, or how did that strike you? Like once the Dwight Howard, you mentioned you weren't a big fan or a huge fan, but once he actually had committed that he was coming to Atlanta, what were your next thoughts before Al Horford left?
Yeah, there was a brief time where we were sort of outlining ways in which to keep all three. And I was thinking about the, 96 minutes at the two positions and kind of divvying them up, 32, 32, 32 kind of stuff, trying to get creative. But I never thought that was actually going to happen. I did sort of buy that the Hawks were trying to keep Horford with Howard and then potentially trade Millsap. There was a lot of rumors about that potentially happening. I would have been on board with that simply because the Hawks are going to be facing a similar situation next year now with Paul Millsap that they did with Horford. And if they had just re-signed Horford, they wouldn't have had to go through the drama of free agency again like they will with Millsap this next year. Starting out with Howard was not the way I would have gone. Once I did that, I would have rather gone with Horford and then traded Millsap than anything else. But again, going with Howard was sort of the bet they made themselves. They were looking to, get better at rebounding and, potentially shot blocking that stuff. It's definitely a popular choice among the fan base. So they'll probably sell some more tickets based on that. Howard's a local guy, as people know. So that was sort of their mindset, but there was a fleeting moment when I thought they might go with all three, even though that might have been crazy from a salary cap perspective.
So you say you think the fans are excited about the Dwight Howard, because he's definitely been a polarizing figure in the NBA. I guess when I say polarizing, widely disliked, among a lot of people. But because he does have that Atlanta connection, so people are pretty fired up that he's coming there.
Yeah, I think, it's not unanimous by any stretch. I write for Peachtree Hoops. It's a very split community, I would say, on it because of, I think partly because of the fact that most of our writers didn't like the move. So people are starting to agree with us a little bit. But I think in general, the consensus among especially casual fans is that they're really excited about Dwight. Dwight's a big name. The Hawks haven't had that kind of big name star guy that you can kind of point to. I know Dwight's not really a star in terms of his play anymore, but he's a very famous basketball player.
Right.
And also, he is from here, which people like quite a bit. So it's a guy that people know that don't necessarily know the Hawks. And it's been a knock on the Hawks in terms of the local fans, and that this has been sort of a boring team to follow. I would push back on that in terms of their play recently. They're a pretty entertaining team to watch play, but it's not exactly a personality driven bunch. So Howard should be interesting in an infusion in that way. It could be more interesting to cover this team. I'm not sure they'll be better on the court or anything like that. But most of the fans, I think, is pretty happy about having a guy that they at least can identify, you know, in a lineup. If you line the guys up, I'm not sure everybody knew who what Paul Millsap looks like. But Dwight Howard's a guy who's famous enough to where the fan base is kind of in on him, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely a shame because Paul Millsap, you know, has definitely been one of the top power forwards in the NBA the last couple of years. Just keeps getting, it seems like he keeps getting better and better. That is too bad there for Paul. But the, so with the Jeff Teague trade, trading that for the pick that became Taurean Prince, the Hawks have now hitched their wagon to Dennis Schroeder. What's your confidence level going into this season that Schroeder is the guy for the Hawks and he can take a full-time load of like starters minutes, 35 minutes or more to lead this team?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm pretty sure that he's going to be playing that role for sure. Like, there's not really the they made a little bit of an investment behind him in Malcolm Delaney, who's a guy people don't really know, but a guy I actually like. But it's certainly Dennis's team now. This is a team that's not really set up to be driven by one specific player. That's not really Bud's style as the head coach. But at the same time, Schroeder's really the only guy on the team now that can kind of create his own offense and create for others at the point guard spot or really just anywhere on the court. They're starting two wings in Kent Bazemore and Kyle Korver that are really not creators. So it's going to be a lot of Dennis with the ball in his hands. I do like Dennis. I don't think I'm as high on him as some of the fan base is. I think a lot of people think he's going to be like a legitimate star. I don't really see that. I know he's very young. He's still 22 years old. But the upside is considerable. I don't think he's going to be like a top 5 point guard at any point like that. But he could be a top, you know, 10 or 12 guy down the line. In terms of this year, I think he'll be a, you know, an average starting point guard, which is fine. I mean, for right. his age, like that's kind of all you need him to be for what, especially what they're going to pay him. He'll be a free agent after this year, but he'll be restricted. So they can kind of match anything that gets offered to him that way. And I think that's a pretty reasonable expectation for him is to be just an average starter. And I think the Hawks would be pretty happy with that considering his age and what he could get, what he could end up being down the line.
Yep. He's a guy that I like. I like him in almost that like cult status where he's yeah. he's so skinny. He obviously he's got the really cool hair. He still looks, I mean, he's 22, but he looks even younger to me. But I'm definitely worried that as an outsider looking in, just watching the Hawks games, I always thought last year that like, even though the numbers sometimes pointed that Dennis Schroeder was the better player, for me, he was more of like that change of pace guy. Cause he, you know, he can't really shoot. He can't create his own jump shot and make it. And my concern would be if the Hawks turn the, you know, the keys to the car over to him, which they have done, that NBA defenses will be able to crack down on the fact that like, hey, we just can't let this guy get to the rim. And so I think my worry as an outsider is like, this might be a rough, rough transition. And again, like Malcolm Delaney is, I don't know a ton about him other than, you know, he's like a low key under the radar. We like him, but like he's 27. He's not probably going to light the world on fire. And then you have Jarrett Jack. So like the Hawks point guard questions could like, I don't know. There is no other option. Like once he starts struggling, but
yeah. I think that for sure there's going to be a downgrade in the overall point guard play from last year to this year, just because even if you think that Schroeder can be as good as Teague, which, you know, I'm not sure about, and especially in year one, maybe down the line, I think it's pretty safe to assume that Schroeder is not going to be as good as Teague was over the last couple of years. But even if you assume those guys are equal, your backup player is not going to be as good as Dennis Schroeder was last year. So the point guard position is going to be worse for the Hawks. I think just in general, the team is probably going to be a little bit worse, but that's one spot where you can point to, barring a jump that I don't really see from Dennis, that's going to be a downgrade overall, but I'm with you on the jump shooting concerns and really the concerns overall and as to what he's going to look like in a bigger role. He's not going to be efficient. That's one thing I know about Dennis right now is that his efficiency is not going to be great. I think his the counting numbers will be there. Like he's going to score, he's going to get assists, he's going to be active. He's a pretty good defensive player. He's very long, athletic. But in terms of being an efficient, you know, low turnover, high percentage shooter guy, that's not really going to be him. He's very confident. He's very not shy about his abilities.
Oh right, yeah.
He thinks he's one of the best players in the league. It's just ask him.
Yeah.
So that's something I like about Dennis. Honestly, is that he's super confident, but it does lead him down some ugly paths sometimes where he does some things where he probably shouldn't be doing them. So your concerns, I think, are pretty valid as a guy who's seen him play a bunch.
Yeah, you mentioned the jump shooting just of him, but also the whole team. Like last year, the Hawks were low key not good at offense. I feel like even kind of serious NBA fans just assume based on the, I guess, the holdover of the 60 win season that like the Hawks are this offensive juggernaut, But actually, they were kind of bad, and they were pretty bad at shooting threes. And so now they're losing Horford and Teague. Do you think there's any chance that they can improve on that number from last year at offense, or are they just definitely going to have to take a step back and do it all on the defensive end?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that's something the fan base is still having a hard time wrapping their head around, is that last year that was a defensive-oriented team. They finished the season number 2 in defense and defensive rating in the league behind the Spurs, and I don't think anybody would know that. That's not a diehard NBA person.
Right.
But they were very good defensively and really kind of bad offensively, like you said. Actually, I think they're going to be worse offensively this year than they were last year in terms of efficiency. You know, going from Howard to Horford is a downgrade in efficiency in terms of not necessarily in their individual percentages, but I think Howard is not as good of an offensive player overall as Horford is. The spacing is going to be hurt by the fact that you go from Horford, who's a guy who can shoot out to three-point land, to Howard, who really is a very limited, a quality and efficient guy in his own right, but a very limited player offensively. But the bigger one for me, again, is point guard, in that, you know, Schroeder's not going to be efficient. And this is a team that doesn't have a ton of shooters. I've said on my podcast a bunch of times now that I think the only guy on this team that you know is an above average shooter is Kyle Korver. You know that Korver's a great shooter. But aside from that, you have a bunch of guys who were just okay shooters, like Kent Bazemore's okay. Paul Millsap's okay at shooting. I think Delaney will be good as a backup point guard, but Schroeder's not a good shooter. Obviously, Howard's a non-shooter completely. And, you know, even the backup wings are Tim Hardaway Jr. and Tabo Sefolosha, neither of which you know are going to be great shooters by any stretch. So I think this team's going to need more shooting down the line. And for this year, I think the offense could be easily like one of the bottom 10 in the league in terms of rating at the end of the season. And it's going to be a defensive team. They, as much as this sounds crazy, they could be better defensively this year than they were last year, even though they were very good. Because I think Schroeder is better than Teague, and obviously Howard has a pedigree on that end. But the offense could be ugly in my estimation.
Right. You mentioned Ken Bazemore, who got paid this offseason. Is there an anticipation that he has any more room to improve? Like, are they signing that contract hoping that he just maintains that level, or does he still have somewhere to go before he hits a ceiling?
I'm sure they're hoping he's going to improve. I think last year was sort of his ceiling. I think it's conceivable that Bazemore improves on that, but he is 27. He got a late start in terms of being like a prominent NBA player, so that gives you a little bit of room to think he could be a little bit better. And the Hawks are kind of known for their player development, but last year, and he shot I think 35% from three on the year. If he could just replicate that again, I think the Hawks would take that willingly. And the deal, you know, $17 million a year sounds like a lot of money for Kent Bazemore, but in today's cap environment, like, that's kind of the going rate for like a average starting wing, which I think Bazemore can be. But I think you touched on it a little bit. It's just his ceiling is not particularly high. I think if you told me that he would do exactly what he did last year for the next 4 years, I would run and just be very thankful about that.
Right.
There's a little bit of room for growth, but not a ton. I don't think people are going to be – I think it's possible that fan base is going to be getting a little bit of pushback for Bazemore, because they're going to assume he's going to be better after signing that kind of contract, but I don't think that's really in the cards.
Right. I'm a Grizzlies fan, and all the huge contracts the Grizzlies have handed out the last couple of years, it's like, our hope is, I hope he's 90% of what he was the year before. All right. Like, it's like Marc Gasol, Chandler Parsons, Mike Conley. If we can get them back to like 85%, okay.
Yeah, you'll take that for sure. That's the same way I feel about Kent Bazemore. Just kind of do what you did last year and I'll be fine.
Yep. Kyle Korver, I'm seeing a lot on Peachtree Hoops and some other blogs. It seems everyone has drunk this Kool-Aid of he was hurt last year in the offseason, so he didn't get his offseason routine in. So I feel like a lot of people are expecting a bounce back. Are you one of those, or has Father Time and NBA schemes, defensive schemes, caught up with him?
I think it's a combination of both. I do think knowing Kyle a little bit and watching him up close, I think he's a guy who's extremely, you know, process and routine oriented, as most elite shooters are. And the offseason injury last year did affect his preparation. And if, you know, last year early in the year, he definitely struggled. And the second half of the season, he was back up to where he normally is, in that 43-44% range from three. So I do think that's in terms of shooting, I think that having the full offseason will help him a lot. But there is the age concern. You said Father Time. I mean, he's 35 years old. So Kyle Korver is a guy who keeps himself in incredible shape, and he's very big for a shooting guard. He's like a legit 6'7", 6'7 and a half, and very long, which could help. And he's not super reliant on athleticism for the way he plays the game. But at the same time, like eventually it's gonna happen for Kyle, where he really just kind of falls off precipitously. So it's somewhere in the middle. I think he'll be better than he was last year by the percentages in terms of shooting, but you'll see some slippage, and maybe his defense is going to slip a little bit. I've sort of defended Korver a lot on his defense in the last couple of years, just to say that he's a relatively solid defender. People just assume that he's awful because he's a white guy who shoots.
Right.
But he's not a bad defender. Like, he's not a lockdown guy by any stretch, but he's just fine. You've seen that the Hawks are very good defensively with him on the court, and that's not necessarily because of him, but he doesn't hurt their defense. I think that could slip a little bit as he gets a little bit older, but the shooting, I think, will have a bounce back, but certainly not to the level where he was, you know, 2 years ago when he was the best shooter on the planet, you know, knocking down like 48% from three. That's not, those days are over, but I think, you know, somewhere in the low 40s for Kyle would be nice. And hopefully they can scale back on his minutes a little bit with the addition of the rookies, maybe down the line, or maybe some more playing time for a guy like Tim Hardaway Jr., who I don't love, but I know the Hawks are sort of coming around on. So Korver just managing his minutes and seeing what you can get out of him. But he's the one guy on the team, again, that's a knockdown shooter. So they're going to have to play him extensively with guys like Howard and Schroeder, because of the fact that those guys are going to be hard pressed to find spacing otherwise.
Yeah, you mentioned Kyle Korver's defense. He's a guy I like to point out to people that a lot of times surprises them. At this point, Blake Griffin has almost no chance of catching Kyle Korver in career block shots. Like, you know, yeah, like Kyle Korver gets more than twice the number of block shots as Blake Griffin gets. So, yeah.
Yeah, we use the, some of the people on the Hawks Twitter talk about hands havoc Korver, because he's very handsy in a good way defensively. He's very long, and his block shots are kind of hilarious, because he's one of the better shot blocking, I guess you can call him a guard in the league,
right?
Which is funny. You wouldn't assume that from Kyle, but he's very active and yeah, gets in pass lanes and blocks some shots. So it's fun.
It's like him and Dwayne Wade. Do you think that the rookies will have a chance to get in, like, in the backup wing rotation when the season starts? It'll still be Tim Hardaway's job, or, you know, Tim Hardaway to see if he, cause they did make an investment of that draft pick, but, you know, like, he seemed to be in and out of the lineup last year, showed some flashes. So do you think that he might be the first guy off the bench, or Thabo, or will they let the rookies maybe get in Bembry and Prince before Hardaway?
I think early in the year you're going to see Thabo and Hardaway as the two backup wings. I'd be pretty surprised if you didn't see that, barring some sort of last minute trade or something like that. I hated the Hardaway trade basically more than anyone possibly could have. I'm a Michigan fan who watched him up close a lot in college. I'm not a big Hardaway guy. I don't think he's particularly good. And you saw last year, you mentioned him being in and out of the rotation last year. He was basically, after the trade, he basically disappeared for the first 2 months. He was inactive. I don't think the Hawks like what they saw up close when they got him. He did earn his way into the rotation, which is encouraging if you believe in him, but I really don't. But I think he does start the season in the rotation, and obviously the Hawks love Thabo, and he's a guy who was just a glue guy, great defensive player, who's going to be around in the rotation. I do think the rookies have a chance by the end of the year, especially when compared to Hardaway. If Hardaway struggles at all, or if the rookies are just so good that at least one of them can sort of usurp Hardaway in the rotation. But I think, you know, barring a trade or an injury, you're going to have Korver, Bazemore, and Cephalosha, and they're all going to play real minutes. So that's three guys who are going to play real minutes on the wing, and then the other three guys, Hardaway and the two rookies, are sort of battling it out for that last spot.
So you seem to have a very level-headed realist approach talking to you right now, which I like. You don't seem overly optimistic, which is fun. My last interview was with Ty Windish, who covers the Bucks. I've unbridled optimism from that guy. I was just thinking, like, I don't think the Bucks are good, but anyway.
Yeah, that's not me. I mean, I try to be level headed, and, you know, I'll get excited when it warrants it. But yeah, and that's, I'm trying to be the I'm probably a pessimist by nature, which probably plays into that. But I try to be as level as possible.
Yeah, it seems so. The Hawks, I think the Hawks' outlook for this season is, you know, you're hoping with Schroeder cutting to the bucket, looking for Dwight Howard. Like, Dwight Howard hasn't had an offense in many years where it's been a primary pick and roll, try to get him the ball, look for him down low. And so you think if that goes well, and then obviously Paul Millsap maintains, the wings bounce back and their shooting percentage goes up, the Hawks are back in the playoffs again, you know, could possibly get like mid 40s, maybe 46, 47 wins. But then I guess the opposite of that, in my mind, is defenses key in on Schroeder. They collapse on him. Korver doesn't look as good. The wing rotation doesn't look as good. Dwight Howard brings his funk. And then you have a team that misses the playoffs for the first time in a long time. So where do you fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, first of all, I'm with you on both scenarios. I think the high side is somewhere in that, you know, 3-4 seed range where you're winning high 40s, and the low side is definitely missing the playoffs. I've caught some flack from Hawks fans for saying that missing the playoffs was an actual possibility. I think people don't think that that's in the cards, and I think it's at least possible. In the end, I think I'm going to predict the Hawks to make the playoffs, but more as like a 7-8 seed, a team that wins in the low 40s range, somewhere in that like 41 to 43 win range would be my prediction. But the Howard stuff is real, man. Like, if that doesn't work out, or if he gets banged up, that's going to be ugly in terms of the win total. And Schroeder also is a volatile player. So if both those guys hit their high sides and play as well as they can play, this could be a very, very good team. Not a great team, but a good one. But if either one of those guys flames out, or you get some regression from a guy like Bazemore in year one, you could be looking at a team that definitely misses the playoffs. I think that's a very realistic scenario, even if I'm going to pick them to finish somewhere in that 7-8 range. A lot of that's just me trusting Mike Budenholzer. I think he's one of the 10 best coaches in the league, even just conservatively, probably somewhere in that top 6-7 range. So I think that having him on board helps quite a bit. And if you had a random NBA coach with this roster, I'd probably pick them to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think they're very similar, where, again, I cover the Grizzlies a lot, and the Grizzlies fans are very optimistic, and I'm the same way. Like, I can definitely, like, guys, this team could be a disaster, like an utter disaster. So I think the Hawks and the Grizzlies both have a pretty wide range of, like, man, they could win like 32 games, you know, or they could all come together and they could be upper 40s. But also, like the Grizzlies, the Hawks and the Grizzlies are kind of similar in the fact that they're on this like playoff treadmill where they don't seem to be legit contenders any year, but they keep making the playoffs and they don't ever do like a full rebuild. So I'm curious, what's your opinion as a Hawks fan on the playoff treadmill and whether or not the Hawks should ever try to do a full, like, blow it up?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Grizzlies. That's a great comp for the Hawks in really a lot of different ways. A lot of the ways that, you know, I think the Grizzlies are like this too, with in the way that if you rebuild and really blow it up, you're worried about losing your fan base.
Yeah,
your fan base isn't that large to begin with. Memphis has had a great job and done a great job in that sort of grit and grind era of selling a lot of tickets, getting a lot of investment from the city. But if you're suddenly bad for a couple years, that could go away in a city that's just not that big to be sustaining an NBA team. Obviously, Atlanta's a much bigger market, but the Hawks fan base itself has not ever been one that's gotten big enough to sort of match that market. There's a very limited selection of like diehard Hawks fans that wouldn't go anywhere. And I think that's one of the reasons they signed Dwight Howard this year, honestly, is to try to generate some exposure and try to make sure people are in the stands so they can sell tickets. I'm in favor of the blow up option. I would have preferred that to what they did this summer. I was on board with giving Horford the 5-year max and sort of just running it back a little bit and sort of doing a rebuild on the fly, using the T trade to take 2 first round picks and kind of go about that way. But I would have rather have them just kind of blow the whole thing up than just sign Howard and keep it going on the treadmill. So I get why they do it. I know that a lot of people will argue with me on this point and that the Hawks just can't rebuild because of the fan base. And I get that. But I think it'd be worth it in the long term to kind of just hope your fans stick around, get very creative. The Hawks are very good at marketing themselves locally now under a new CEO named Steve Koonin, to where if they blew it up and had a shorter rebuild, maybe a 2-year rebuild, they could probably sustain that. And that's something I would really like for them to try, because, you know, at a certain point, like, it's frustrating to know your team is going to win in that 40 in the 40s every year and never really have a chance to win the title. And I think that's definitely where they are now. I think they can sort of bank on that fact that they won 60 a couple years ago to say, hey guys, look, we won 60 games. But the Hawks weren't really a 60-win team that year. I mean, they played like one, but I don't think anybody really thought of them as like a legitimate, you know, front runner for the title, even though winning 60 games is awesome. That was definitely a regular season team more so than a playoff team. So I think the Hawks should try it. I have my doubts as to whether they ever will willingly rebuild. I think it almost might take a disastrous season where everything goes wrong on accident. Mm-hmm. For them to kind of bottom out and see what things could happen. That could happen this year, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think if things go badly, they could look to maybe trade Paul Millsap, get a haul for him because he's going to be an expiring contract, and then look to see what you can get for Dwight on the open market or something like that. If things go horribly in the first 2 months, and I don't want to say I'm rooting for that, but I think it'd be almost good for the team long term to not play well here early in the season and sort of to look to the future more than the present.
Yeah. Speaking of the fan base and growing the fan base, I have a concern I want to raise to kind of wrap things up. So I live in Nashville, and we are a secondary Hawks market as far as television market. So yeah. So we get Hawks games, but we only get Hawks games if they play on a day the Grizzlies don't play. So this has become a TV. We're in a weird TV blackout nightmare zone where I pay for cable, I pay for League Pass, and I can't watch about half or more of the Hawks games. And like I raise it with Comcast. I'm like, you guys are supposed to be showing a Hawks game. It's blacked out. Like I contacted Sports South and Fox Sports, who like, you know, have the TV rights ostensibly, but don't show the games on Comcast cable. And they even tried contacting the Hawks. I was emailing with some VP a few years ago. Like, we're in your quote unquote regional market, and it's literally impossible to watch Hawks games. So I don't know if you know anyone who could raise this question. Maybe new ownership wants to know about this. I thought about when the team was bought and they were like talking about the new extending the television rights. I'm like, you realize Nashville, like we're in this shadow where we don't get to watch any of your games. So I don't.
Yeah. Sports South's a funny one, man. Like on one hand, I'd be jealous of somebody like you who can see both teams without having to pay. But at the same time, that definitely presents some issues. I have my brother actually lives in Nashville, so I'll have to see if he has figured this out. I doubt that he has. I do know some people at Fox Sports South, so maybe I can
put a
good word.
Cause I know the satellite companies use like alternate channels for like, so you'll get both Sports South channels. Comcast, which again is by far the largest provider in our city of television, will just black it out. And this would happen because, you know, the Hawks are always jokingly the NBA TV playoff series every year. So it would happen that our games will be blacked out on NBA TV and not available on television. And I'm like, this is a playoff game. And they won't let us watch it in Nashville. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a nightmare scenario. I would be doing what you're doing and calling everyone I possibly could know. That happened to me.
Since I don't like care for the Hawks a ton, like my fire burned out. Like when I tried a couple years ago real hard. I was like emailing all these people like, don't you care that we can't watch your games? But I guess no one does.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, for a secondary market, I think that's it happens with the Hawks in South Carolina as well. And that you're getting split between the Hawks and the Hornets.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Nashville's not the only place where this is a problem. I'm almost positive about that.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. Anyway, last question. Since we are recording this on Labor Day weekend and you are in Atlanta, I have to ask you, what are you dressing up for Dragon Con?
Oh, I will not set foot at Dragon Con. Listen, anyone who's a native Atlanta and who does not go into that knows full well to avoid downtown this weekend. It's going to be an absolute disaster between that. And there's also the college football kickoff game at the Georgia Dome. So I will not be going anywhere near downtown Atlanta this weekend. Let me tell anyone now who listens to this before then, do not go down there for any reason at all. It's going to be a disaster.
I went to Dragon Con 1 year just to kind of people watch. And like not very non-judgmentally people watch. Like I'm not real into fantasy, but like I watch sci-fi, watch movies, I play video games. I was blown away. I will tell anyone.
Oh, it's a spectacle, man. Yeah. It really is. Like I have a friend that works in a hotel right there at the Omni Hotel in Atlanta, like in the middle of everything, who on this particular weekend, I think he might be on vacation on purpose just to try to get out of what is an absolute circus. Yeah. But yeah, it's certainly fun to watch people. That's a great time to do that. If you're a big people watcher, it would be a good time if you can get down there early enough and just kind of set up shop and just watch what transpires.
Man, I was with a bunch of people on a bachelor party and we just sat by an escalator and watched a sea of people in costumes go by for like hours. And we were just jaws agape, just enraptured. Like, this is amazing. But anyway.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
All right. Well, Brad, thanks for your time. You got anything you want to plug or tell people where they can read your stuff or hear you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm doing a daily podcast on the Hawks called Locked On Hawks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where there's a podcast for every single team. Go ahead and check that out. You know, find us on iTunes or wherever you find your podcast. And also, I write for Peachtree Hoops, which is an SB Nation blog. My Hawks home for writing, and just come visit us anytime. Nothing in particular right now. We're in the off season, as everybody knows, but always content going up in both places.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, Brad, and best of luck to the Hawks this season.
Thanks for having me, man. Happy to do it anytime.
All right. Okay. Thanks to Brad for all that good stuff about Atlanta. People down in Atlanta, hope you guys had an awesome time at Dragon Con over the weekend. Everyone else, I hope you guys have a safe and happy Labor Day. So remember, write those iTunes reviews to win Fan Essentials. Follow us on Twitter at FastBreakBreak. Check out Rabble.tv. Thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.